on, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John Couch. John engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. It's Friday, November the 6th, 2020. If 2020 feels like the year that never ends, I think this week might feel kind of like the longest week of the year. We're here on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk, KVOI. Have worldwide live listening, our podcasts available for you, and I hope you will check it out, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, a big thank you, TucsonSentinel.com. The Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, thank you to Dan Shear, who is with me in studio. Thanks, Dan, for your support.
Thank you.
The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications includes Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. The Friday Focus interview today features Dr. Kate Kensky. Dr. Kensky, professor in the University of Arizona Department of Communication, where she teaches political communication, public opinion, and research methods. She's the co-author of the book, The Obama Victory, How Media, Money, and Message Shaped the 2008 Election. The publisher is Oxford University Press. Dan Shear is with me in studio, and Dan is the editor of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, and he's the editorial director for two dozen or so newspapers owned by the Sierra Vista-based WIC Communications. Dan, good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Kate Kensky, welcome to our program again, Kate.
Thank you for having me.
Kate, tell me, did the pollsters blow it for a second presidential election in a row?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't know if it's so much that the pollsters blew it. I would say that there is a tendency in the media to misuse what polls can offer people. And I think that that's always been true. I've said it on this show before that when looking at polls, it doesn't make sense to necessarily look at the point estimates, which means, you know, treat those averages as though they are a truth. You have to contextualize them. And that is one thing that I think the media have been incredibly poor about communicating.
And, of course, the Trump voter the Trump voter was an exception because basically they don't trust pollsters. So, who knows what they would say to a pollster?
I mean, that's a possibility. I would say that it's, you know, probably pretty rare that someone spends a large amount of time with someone else on the phone because that eats away from their time, you know, giving false answers. What's more likely is that simply that the Trump supporters were, you know, slightly less likely to be willing. And that changes the polling methodology because what it means is you go from something where you assume you have this probability sample, but you have a selection bias such that, you know, part of your group is missing. So your poll is no longer as representative as, it otherwise would have been.
Is that really just Trump people or is it all of us? Because I know I was getting probably 10 to 15 calls a day on my cell phone or my landline at home, and after a while, you just, of course, just stop answering them, and you certainly don't want to tell a stranger what you're thinking. So isn't that just all of us?
You know, that has generally been true in polling, and that's not a recent phenomenon. We know, for example, that whenever you do, if it's a call, we know that people who are older or are more likely to, you know, answer phones than young people when it comes to doing polls. For a long time, it was non-whites that were harder to get. And so what it means is when you know that your sample doesn't quite, you know, isn't going to be representative because it's not completely random, the pollster has to start putting weights towards certain groups. So if it's the case that that non-whites, for example, are not answering, those that do answer get a little bit more weight when I calculate the results. But how I create those weights makes a difference. And so if I'm wrong on how I create the weights, then I'm going to be wrong on how I'm representing the outcome. But to your point also about fatigue, yes. I mean, we've, in the last 10 years, we've gone crazy with surveys here in the U.S., and that does result in fatigue. You get so many calls, and you can't spend all your free time, you know, giving other people answers about your life.
One of the things that maybe the big story out of it, maybe the most surprising, and I'd like to hear what you say, the biggest surprise wasn't necessarily that Donald Trump overperformed in the polls. The situation with Congress, that was somewhat of a surprise, or maybe a big surprise, wasn't it?
You know, and I would say that's where we go from national polls to state polls. And I would say the consistency of the state polling is much more variable for a couple of reasons. One has to do with the extent to which each state has pollsters who have expertise in that state. It's not always the case that hiring a national firm, for example, is best in a state if those national pollsters don't understand the nuances of the various counties and how people are likely to turn out and therefore how you'd want to create your weights. And so, you know, that can change. The other reason is very simply that with those state polls, the numbers tend to be fewer because people don't have as much money for the state polls, and polling can be expensive. And so as a result, you have small sample sizes, and that means large margins of error.
Yeah.
All the polls had Mark Kelly on top in his Senate race, and several of them even predicted a double-digit win. Turns out it was between 3 and 4 percentage points against Martha McSally. Are polls being manipulated by some campaigns to discourage people from going to the polls or to get them to switch their votes to a winner? Because this seemed like it was really way off.
I mean, I would say that there's no evidence of direct manipulation. And I would say that for polling firms, they tend to look well beyond the current election they're in. And if you're not accurate, you're not going to get people to hire you the next time around. And so I don't think it was direct manipulation. I think it's much more likely that for, you know, those on the right who I would say felt perhaps empowered in 2016 when Hillary Clinton, you know, didn't win, it was kind of an incentive perhaps to not participate. Whether or not polling results influence how people turn out, I would say there isn't a lot of evidence. It reminds me of, concerns, for example, in 2000 when calls were made on the East Coast. And there was concern that East Coast media coverage of the East Coast had affected West Coast turnout. In reality, we really don't know whether or not those kinds of results matter. And so I would say by the same token, we don't know the extent to which whether having Biden ahead in the polls or having Kelly ahead in the polls, made that side more bold, or whether it actually discouraged them from turning out. Because if your candidate's way ahead, what's the point of dragging yourself the poll if you were, you know, only lukewarm to begin with? And so I would say it's kind of an open question. And I think it is a really important question. There is one way that we know, though, that polls matter. And we know that when the media focus on the horse race, which has become, increasingly a large percentage of the media presentation of politics, we know that people become more cynical. That's what research has told us, experimental research. So, you know, if there's any kind of effect of polling, you know, it's not just, who's turned out, but also how it makes us think about the political process.
And it's worth noting that pollsters, they've got it wrong in the past. I mean, of course, one of the most famous had Dewey beating Truman by 5 percentage points. He was so sure of Dewey's victory that the Gallup firm stopped polling 2 weeks before the election and simply ignored 14% of the voters who said that they were undecided. So, I mean, the history of polling is really interesting, and I guess modern-day polling goes back to the Roosevelt era, doesn't it?
It does. I think that as times change, pollsters change their methodology. And after the Reader Digest poll, which was a convenience sample that, you know, in the 1940s showing one candidate winning and, you know, the other one actually had won, you know, changes were made so that polls could be more representative. I think that because of the way we communicate now, not having as many landlines in the home, people having cell phones, but getting so much contact, not just from pollsters, but, you know, from everybody, from Facebook, you know, from Twitter, creating dings on their phone, that people tune out. And that just means with current methodology, it is harder to get a representative poll. It doesn't mean that, you know, the polls are useless, but I think it is probably, you know, time to consider that we shouldn't put so much stock in polls when it comes to, you know, thinking. I mean, I'm not exactly sure why we are, you know, so concerned in some ways, you know, in September, who's ahead and who's behind. What would be more useful would be to focus on what do these candidates stand for, what are they saying, and what have their track records been.
Pundits are saying that the clear loser in the election, though, is polling. What specifically do you see changing going forward from 2020? What have we learned this year? And I know we're still trying to figure things out for this election.
So what I would say is one, and again, it's something that I have said on this program before, is that we can't, I mean, so polls provide a snapshot in time. And when we look at those, they do have those margins of error. If the media aren't able to convey margins of error, you know, basically they shouldn't be used, you know, to put too much stock into them. Number two, I think that you know, pollsters from the political consulting side will continue to use them. They might not be as inclined to release their results, but I think they are useful for telling you whether or not your candidate has momentum and with whom your candidate has some momentum. And so I see those continue to be used. Now, whether or not the media choose to report on them, you know, is another question. And I think that if what the media wants is that answer, who's ahead, who's behind, then we'll probably have the same conversation in 2024.
All right, Dr. Kate Kensky, stick around. Dr. Kensky, professor in the University of Arizona Department of Communication. She teaches political communication, public opinion, and research methods. Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News. After the break, we'll get into social media. What role did it play in election 2020? But right now, I want to talk about a sure winner. Dan, you know where that is.
Mona's.
Yes, it is. It's Mona's Danish Bakery. Heard from owner and chief baker Steve today. He said, tell everybody Thanksgiving's only about 3 weeks away. So it would be a good time to start do your inventory. Are you going to do you want pies? Do you want the Danish Kringle, which is such a beautiful pastry that would be real nice on Thanksgiving morning? How about the dinner rolls? You know, getting it all together, and they will accommodate you whatever your needs are. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. There's a link to Mona's website at buckmastershow.com. You can put in your order. I suggest you do it early. And there is a wide variety, not only of flavors of the Danish Kringle, but pies as well. Dan, are you a pumpkin pie guy? Do you like a nice pumpkin pie?
I've had the apple from Mona's, and it's awesome.
Ooh, it is very good. Anyway, they've got a great variety up at Mona's. I will see you at Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. We'll go back to the live line with Dr. Kate Kensky right after this. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Dan Shearer is with me in studio. Dan is the editor of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. He's also very much involved. In fact, he's the editorial director of the two dozen newspapers that are owned by Sierra Vista-based WIC Communications. And most of the papers are, I think, with one exception in Louisiana, are all west of the Mississippi.
Right.
Did I get that right?
Yep, okay. You're right.
Dr. Kate Kensky with us on the Live Line. The Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Kensky, professor in the University of Arizona Department of Communication. She teaches political communication, public opinion, and research methods. Her book was very well received. It's still available. The Obama Victory, How Media, Money, and Message Shaped the 2008 Election. And I'm going to pick up on that title, Kate. How did media, money, and message shape this election?
Well, those are always complicated
questions
to ask, to take. So, you know, it's hard to say at this point. I think that what makes 2020 different from a lot of other elections is that You know, typically it's the candidate messages that drive so much about how people think about the candidates. And I'm sure that that is still true to a large extent. But we have a lot of messages coming from other sources that are really hard to calculate. And so measuring their effects becomes, you know, troubling. So here I'm talking about the disinformation campaigns out there, that are just, you know, trying to sway votes, trying to prime particular issues. And that is going to be a project to figure out, what happened in this election. But hard to say right now. We do know, that if you want to look at information about what the candidates did, we do know that there was a huge ramp up in spending when it came to candidate presence on social media, and so that increased quite a bit in October.
Okay, so that's the media portion, and I was just going to say, huge spending on social media and money. This campaign will go down in history as the most expensive so far. And now message, bottom line, what was the message from each of the candidates?
I think that we had a couple. I think it came down to, either being, for Trump or against Trump and what Trump represented. There were different pitches on different types of issues. But for the most part, I would say a lot of the messaging focused on whether or not Trump was the right person to continue to lead, given where we were in the pandemic. There were other issues, of course, not necessarily, prompted by the candidates, but by outside groups. Here I'm talking about, QAnon proliferating messages about, whether or not the Democrats were involved in, some kind of conspiracy related to child pedophilia. And so those messages were out there as well.
Dan Scheer.
You said that early on in the campaigns, the media should focus on issues, focus on track records. Instead, we focus on tweets or comments that go viral or very early polling that doesn't mean much. I love your idea, but what's it going to take for us to head in that direction and actually get back to the things that matter?
I think that's an excellent question, because I think we're in a chicken and egg cycle. And, on the one hand, because I think in part with how, technology has changed, but even before that, humans have a tendency to be attracted to those dramatic headlines. And, most media are, require funding to keep going. And so in some sense, the media have been giving the public what it seems to respond to, which is these conflict stories. And so, what will it take? Well, maybe it'll be a healthy thing if, some people are saying we don't want to hear about the polls. We don't believe in the polls. Because in a sense, that kind of rejection might lead to a different type of coverage, one that does focus more heavily on the substance. What do these men stand for? What are their platforms? Are there any areas in which both candidates fundamentally agree on certain items, so that we know that it doesn't matter who's elected, such and such will happen? Those are the kinds of things that I think, would help. But right now we don't have a public, I think, that has been, cultivated for that kind of appetite.
And Dan, I think you'd agree with this, that some reporters would find it it's very tempting to just keep following the polls. It's a real easy story to write up for radio and TV and for newspapers. This poll says this and this, and it's an easy piece of copy.
It's an easy piece of copy, and as Kate pointed out, it is what people want, in a sense. They want that little tidbit there. It really isn't news, though, because it generally is not accurate, and it's, in the long run, it's not really, really that meaningful. So that's unfortunate. We touched a little earlier on money, and I want to bring up a figure, $14 billion, which is the estimate of what was spent on congressional and the presidential race this year, $14 billion. Now, I'm assuming that money was poured into specific races based on polling, but all of that money didn't really pay off, at least if you look at Congress. So was the polling off there? And I'm assuming this is like internal polling for campaigns or like the DNC or the Republicans. Should we support this candidate in state X? It's a lot of money,
you know,
and they didn't get much payoff.
It's hard to say. I mean, another interpretation would be it took that kind of money to keep them where they are.
Sure.
In the polls. And so that reinforcement effect. And, of course, you know, for those campaigns where it took that much money to continue to reinforce a slight loss rather than a great loss, that should be a concern.
Traditional media still got a real nice payday out of this, but I don't really know what the difference would be percentage-wise in spending from 4 years ago into social media. I would assume that social media got a big boost, Kate Kensky.
Yes, a huge boost. Just for any listeners who are interested, there is an excellent website called Illuminating. It's the Illuminating Project. It's illuminating.ischool.syr.edu. It's a group out of Syracuse. And what they've done is they've managed to get the weekly ad totals spent by the campaign. They've coded those ads. And so that gives a sense of you know, how much was put into the campaign, where, what groups were targeted, and what some of the issues and messaging looked like in those targets. And their scale, you know, going by week, has 11 million as the top. And so I think that gives a great sense. So not quite 11 million on social media spending, but for example, on the week of October 19th, Joe Biden's campaign was spending near that.
And Dan and Kate driving to work, I still saw lots of signs, local signs. They're still everywhere. Dan, do you know how long that are there? Is there some kind of rule you've got to?
I want to say it's
a week.
It's 15 days or less,
yeah.
I believe is what it is. And we are going to be out there making sure, holding them accountable.
Yeah, I mean, they're still out there.
Yeah.
Do the signs do any good, or is it just a reinforcement thing, Kate?
I mean, I think for the most part, it's probably a reinforcement. I would say that if a candidate isn't present, that's noticeable. And so there is that expectation that they have the signs out there. And I think that there would be a questioning if your preferred side didn't have any signs out there, you might, you know, infer that your side doesn't have much support in your area.
Kate, you wrote about Obama. Are you going to write a Trump book?
That I'm working with a team, and so we are analyzing data from this campaign. It's a little bit different than 2008. we are working on a project in which a survey were collected in some specific swing states, and it's a large team. I am particularly interested in the early and absentee voting and how that made a difference. And so the short answer is yes, with a team. So we're excited about that. We are about to launch into the post-wave election, but we hope to have interesting results from that.
And the confusion in this election was that each state has different rules on the mail-in voting, and I don't know how many states don't even have mail-in voting, but I think it's a lot. But the ones that do have all sorts of different rules, like Nevada, where I spent some time in my journalism career, up in Clark County. Their rule is if your early ballot is postmarked on election day and you put it in the mail, it's still out there, and they're figuring they won't be counting some of those till Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. Every state that's doing mail-in balloting has different rules.
Absolutely, and it is complicated, and that means for the various campaigns, sort of the, you know, the ways in which they campaign, the way in which they encourage people to vote early, you know, it makes a difference having those rules. I think that I'd heard yesterday, and feel free to correct me, but that that Nevada was going to take in those postmarked ballots like up to 10 days after.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
And, yeah, so 10 days. And I think that's atypical. But, you know, it's interesting, and perhaps the confusion comes in that there isn't a national story to tell because each state has its story, and whether or not the voters inside the state understand all the rules, you know, would appear to be that not everybody does.
Kate, give us one lesson that Donald Trump has taught the polling industry.
That is an excellent question. I think that given his push right now, that he has made it clear that people are now interacting with polls. And typically when we do science, social science, we kind of want to do it under the radar. When I do a survey, I don't want people interacting with me and asking me questions about, you know, why I'm doing it, what my motivations are. I just want to assess them. And so I think that he has heightened people's awareness about polling as tools and how they could potentially kind of manipulate by not participating. And so I would say that's the big lesson. And I think what that means for pollsters is that they are going to have to become that much better at, you know, things like weighting and maybe how they present their data and how they think about their data, how they think about the limitations of their data, and how that they're going to be very cautious when reporting any kind of results.
Dr. Kate Kensky, always a pleasure. Kate, professor at the University of Arizona Department of Communications. Always good to reconnect with you, Kate. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks a lot. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Kate Kensky was on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dan Scheer sticks around. Want to talk with Dan about our local elections right after this.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Noble Hobbs in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hobbs menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hobbs, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehobbspub.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? Well, not all news is good news. You know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Guests appear on the live line, courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, with me in studio. Dan, it was one of those years in Pima County. It wasn't necessarily the blue tsunami, meaning record turnout, because turnout, I understand, in Pima County pretty much mirrored 2016. But this was the year for Democrats. If you had a D next to your name, you're going to get votes.
Right. And of course, the turnout was largely, I believe, driven by Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And then so they just went on down the ballot. But then there were a lot of Republicans who weren't real happy also with what was going on in Washington. And I think some of that also, there might have been a little bit of support coming from there also. So not a blue tsunami, but certainly they have reasserted their strength in this county.
It will change the complexion of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. The last time District 1, which includes the Foothills area, had a Democrat was Ron Asta back in 1972. Rex Scott is a Democrat, and he's the new Pima County Supervisor-elect. Mr. Scott, just having Allie Miller gone from the board and a person who was aligned with Allie philosophically, that will change, won't it, kind of the tenor of the board?
I think to a point, but again, they would have their majority with or without him, and so it almost didn't matter, and Steve Spain probably would have been much like Allie Miller in that a lot, on the lopsided end of a lot of losing votes and inconsequential. And so as a whole, the board's going to pretty much remain the same and do what they've always done, because they never really was a threat to lose that majority. But now you have Steve Christie, who will be the lone Republican on there, and he will probably focus, and he's very good at doing this anyway, more on his district rather than on, you know, changing the county. And there are going to be some things that he can be very vocal about that the county does that he doesn't like, but he knows he's probably not going to change much countywide. But he's done an awful lot for the district, and I think that's what voters recognized and why they are sending him back to the Board of Supervisors, even though on election night he was losing. And then we got in the late ballots and the people who went to the polls, and then he is surged ahead, and he's not in danger of losing his seat.
Have all of the candidates that did lose conceded?
No. In fact, we just heard from Mark Napier, who is the sheriff and is behind by about 6,000 votes against Democrat Chris Nanos. He just sent out an email probably half an hour ago that says it would be premature to concede the election with the count being this close. So he is not conceding, even though it's a narrow path to victory for him.
I mean, how many votes are outstanding?
What is it in the county? Is it 20,000?
Something like 20?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, he'd have to garner pretty much all of them.
He'd have to get a lot. So we'll see what happened. That was a really interesting race, and of course we had both of the candidates in here for a very good forum, and they did lots of those forums. They were really out there.
They really were.
Yeah, and they're very different people, and they both have experience as sheriff, and they are both in their own right very good lawmen. And so Chris Nanos coming back in, it'll be interesting to see what he's going to change, because he felt that he lost 4 years ago for some very specific reasons. One of them in part was that he had inherited a team that he now wishes he had changed, and he told me that.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what he does now that he has Possibly, if he prevails, he has another shot at this. How is he going to handle the office?
Well, he's got about a month to get the plan together because we've scheduled him with you, Dan. He'll be with us Friday, December 11th to hear about what the plan is. Matt has a plan, and his plan is to be on the show. Matt is on the live line. Go ahead, Matt.
Happy Friday to everybody.
Hey.
It's been a long, long week.
Yep.
I'm going to sleep the whole weekend.
Me too.
Real quickly, you know, I haven't been following, and I told Bill this once upon time, that this election, I haven't been following the politics that great. But the one thing I did know was when we lost Ramon Valadez and we lost Richard Elias and the tragedy of that, the Pima County has really going to change no matter what. And I don't know what the change will be. I think the biggest change that could happen, and it, of course, revolves around the perennial question as to the status of Chuck Huckleberry. And, you know, I think Chuck has been an amazing administrator for Pima County. But I think that this new dynamic, there can be no, we have never seen this change in Pima County to this level with the personages of Matt Hines and the personages of Rex Scott, who's basically an outlier, but I think we're slowly learning more about him. And then Adelita Grijalva. I mean, that is just a major shift to the board. And then we have, of course, Steve Christie returning. So I'm just saying that I am just watching with anticipation because we have really seen a dynamic change here in Pima County.
Yeah,
that's
my opinion. I
would
agree.
I think Dan is right too. I mean, you could just say, "Oh, it's 3-2, 4-1 now, no change," but I don't think that's the case. I think we have some incredibly new people, and they are going to all come at this with their own agendas.
Thanks. Okay, thank you very much, Matt. Speaking of votes being counted in your area of Green Valley, I'm going to have to do a redo.
Looks like it. We have got two races that very clearly the county has given inaccurate vote counts. And I'll give you one example. One is the Continental School override, where they reported about 300 votes being cast in an area where there are about 20,000 registered voters. So something's missing there, and we think it has to do with the machine reading the bubbles and being off a little bit. That and the Green Valley Fire District bond request, first time in their 35-year history that they have ever sought a money from the people. And so we're real curious as to what happens. But, yeah, they might have to hand count those or feed them back through the machine, and they're going to invite the school officials over and everything. But clearly something is wrong in both of those races, so we're in a waiting game.
Speaking of waiting, I love this line from my friend Steve Rivera, who did a sports show here on KVOI. He's got his own sports show on another station right now, but I like this. Waiting for the final election results is like waiting for a kidney stone to pass. Yeah, that's pretty apropos.
I tell you, yeah. And you're getting a blow-by-blow, especially out of Georgia, where it's just so razor-thin, it's incredible.
Yeah, there'll be a recount there, I'm sure.
Sure.
So some final thoughts, Dan, on locally election 2020. We're going to have, we had our legal contributor, Don Luce, on the show explaining how all that's going to work with the now legal recreational marijuana. And that's becomes law November 30th.
Right. And
you have a dispensary in Sahuarita?
We have a medical marijuana dispensary there. And about a week ago, the town council passed something that says that you cannot come in and open up a recreational marijuana dispensary in our community. If you are an existing medical marijuana dispensary, which we have one, you now can bring recreational on. So they're limiting it there. They don't like it. They don't think it's good for our community or for our state. And so they have limited it in the town of Sahuarita.
The vehicle will be kind of existing medical marijuana facilities until, I believe, there'll be some new ones coming on next March.
Right. And we have some newspapers in states where this has already happened. Oregon is one example. And they've got stores now all over the state. I was out at one of our papers about a year ago and actually visited one of them because I wanted to see what a pot shop look like. And
In Oregon.
And I know they don't like us to call it pot, but I'm going to. I think it's just an awful thing. And if you really want to fund services, let's do it through a means that doesn't prey on people. And so I feel very strong about this, but the voters have spoken and we have to honor that. And so we just make the best of it going forward.
And speaking of Oregon, they've taken the next step. What are they going with now? Heroin and cocaine?
Decriminalizing.
Decriminalizing. I guess limited amounts, but still.
Well, let's just say it's slippery slope. I mean, once you bring on medical marijuana and then you bring on recreational and then this is next. And I am all for not taking people who have addictions and throwing them in jail time after time after time. We need to give a good shot at rehabilitation, but I certainly don't understand what they've done.
You know, I wish I had had time yesterday to ask Attorney Don Luce, what about people in jail currently in Arizona who are in there for a small amount of marijuana? You wonder now what that means for them. I guess it won't mean anything because they were convicted
under
a law that was completely different.
That's right. And so they're stuck there. But then, but trust me, for once, they're probably paying attention to what's going on in the news.
Yeah, there you go. Anything you would like to talk about with the paper?
Well, we're busy, and we've got our Discover Southern Arizona magazine coming out real soon, and that's a real big deal for us. It's a tourist magazine, and we're hoping that the 2021 is better than this year, and it only could be. And but we're moving ahead strong, and very proud of our operations in 11 states and what they've been able to accomplish, particularly in this election, by keeping people informed on what's going on.
Will that paper or the magazine be an insert?
It'll be an insert, and then it'll also be available at the airport, and it's given out all year long, and it's extraordinarily popular.
All right. Very much a pleasure to see you again, Dan Scheer. Thanks for all you do for the program.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, that's it for the Buckmaster Show, the news portion, but we've got Weekend Watch, which is going to be maybe the fun portion about what's going on right now. Matt Russell will be with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, as we continue on in the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Hi, this is Pam Krim. CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
All righty then, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Visit southwestnewmexico.org so you can begin your planning to visit a great area of the Southwest, and particularly the Land of Enchantment, southwestnewmexico.org. Great places to stay and so many activities. Let's welcome now Mr. Matt Russell, award-winning Tucson publicist. He is the Inside Tucson Business Food and Beverage columnist. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to be back in the saddle after a little romp around the Northern California wine country.
Quickly, let me ask you a question about the wine country and how, you know, when you see the news, you would think that there's just total devastation up there.
To the contrary, and our hearts and thoughts and prayers do go out to the individuals and families and companies that were affected. But Bill, we went to 9 wineries in Sonoma and Napa, and we did not see one bit of evidence that there was a fire. So
wow.
They do need our business, and I would heartily encourage your listeners to plan a little trip. It's a great and delicious getaway.
Any new concepts when it comes to the new marketplaces?
Yeah, this is a fun one. The Tucson Tamale Company, of course, as you know, has been rolling out a classic and signature tamales for many years. You know, they're going to be making 4 million tamales by hand this year alone, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
But the latest news is an expansion of their offerings at both their Eastside and Oro Valley stores that now feature a retail marketplace with more than 100 different items from purveyors around the world, from gourmet chocolates to exotic hot sauces. And they've also launched a brand new menu of house-made dishes that are frozen for you to take home and enjoy at your convenience. So it's really tamales and then some at the Tucson Tamale Company Marketplace. Have fun shopping this weekend.
For those of us of a certain age, there's a movie that very much talks about and signifies a generation of the 60s, The Graduate.
Indeed. And the openings continue. I've been following the construction of the Graduate Hotel on East 2nd Street in Main Gate Square over the past year or so. And Bill, they are finally open. They call it an integration of modern and casual and upscale, which is all fine and all. But like me, you probably want to know what the food and drink part of the story is. Are you ready for this?
Yep.
There is a rooftop restaurant called the Moonstone, which, as I understand it, is the highest elevation restaurant in the city. The menu is anchored by regionally inspired cuisine and cocktails, and the view, as you can imagine, is a full 360 panorama. I think a little rooftop revelry sounds in order for this weekend at the Graduate.
We have so much fun, Tucson, modernist architecture in this town.
Yes, and you know what? Today kicks off Tucson Modernism Week. They're going to have new versions of their classic programs and events with lectures and a virtual interactive mid-century home tour. But it's the fun programs they're hosting for food and beverage enthusiasts that got my attention, like a digital mod cocktail experience called Cocktails After Dark. They're doing a delicious lecture called Suburban Barbecue, which explores the history of the American backyard barbecue from its rustic roots to its suburban modern apotheosis. It's all weekend long. It's free, and all of the information is at preservetucson.org.
Welcome back again from Northern California's wine country. Thank you, Matt Russell.
Great to be back. Thanks.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend, Christophan. Thanks to my longtime assistant, Rosemary Brandt, everyone here at KVOI, including my engineer and producer, John Couch. The entire team at Bustos Media in Tucson, we all have the same wish for you this weekend. It's get some rest, be safe, make it a good weekend.